Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to the show, my friend. Coach Lauren and I are here to answer your burning nutrition questions today. Lauren, how the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing really good. We had some awful rain this week and now the sun is shining. It's going to be in the 80s tomorrow. We have a relatively chill weekend to look forward to. This is going to be a good day. I can tell. What about you? Everybody healthy in your household?
Everybody's healthy. Everyone got a full night's sleep last night. I'm soaking it up, feeling good, ready to head into the weekend.
A full night's sleep is gold when you have a toddler.
I was just under the impression that year one was the worst for sleep. I don't know. Everyone talks about newborns being the worst at sleep. And I get that that's true for a lot of people. I had like a magical unicorn baby who slept through the night at like 2 months old. But for whatever reason, like it's catching back up to us. So now year two, not easy, like up all the time. I don't know if it's like a teething thing or like a separation anxiety thing. But yeah, I have been really looking forward to that afternoon Diet Coke for the caffeine. And I have never been a caffeine girly.
I know. I wish I had advice for you, but I think it's like you get through it. You find what works for your own kid, and it's not fun, but it's part of the parenting ride.
And I can't complain because when he does sleep, like last night, 12 hours. So I know I have no room to complain. It's just that when you're up at 1 a.m. for several hours because he's bouncing around like the Energizer Bunny, it's hard.
He needs my puppy. You guys need our dog. My dog would so happily play with somebody at 1 a.m. Are you kidding me? He wakes up at 4:30 and like zooms around the house.
Oh my gosh.
On a high.
Oh my God. Lauren, another dog is the last thing we need. Are you kidding? No. We already have two who my son rides like horses right now. Right. I'm like, okay, we have to be gentle with the puppies. Let's relax a little bit.
Oh man. Just squeeze it in. It's fine.
Yeah. What's one more? Okay, we have a lot of questions to get through today. I don't know. People were just very engaged in the question boxes. So we're going to dive right in. And this first question, I think, is a good one for you to answer as a non-meat eater. The question is there a difference between getting protein from yogurt versus meat? I love yogurt and have it at almost every meal, but sometimes I find myself eating yogurt instead of meat.
I did like this question. I felt like it was meant for me because I am a vegetarian and not vegan, and I eat a decent amount of dairy throughout the day. I usually start my day with a big bowl of like cottage cheese and yogurt mixed together. There's pretty much dairy at all of my meals. So this was a great question for me. The difference between dairy and animal protein, they both contain 9 essential amino acids for our body, meaning they're both complete proteins and we need all of those amino acids to get from food, and they are the building blocks of our muscles and really important that we get that from food. So dairy can be a great way for people to get in some calcium, some vitamin D, and some protein. If you enjoy dairy, I would encourage you to eat it if it doesn't have, you know, a negative impact on your tummy and you can digest it well. I actually found a really fun study that compared milk to beef as a post-workout meal. It was very controlled. Each group received 30 grams of protein, and then they tracked the rate of muscle protein synthesis, which is just how fast the body is building new muscle or repairing old muscle after a workout. And milk, dairy initially had an edge, but after 5 hours, the rate was equal, meaning animal protein from meat or from dairy, you're going to get some really good muscle protein synthesis, which is one of the main reasons why we consume protein. My caveat here is if we're looking at animal protein, I would encourage you to find your eating, whether it's red meat, chicken, or turkey, one of the leaner kinds of animal protein. You have to remember that red meat, there is some research that shows people who eat 2 servings of red meat per week may have an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. The risk does go up with greater consumption, and that isn't the case with dairy. The one kind of disclaimer there was there was a study that found people who had a very high milk consumption, which was almost a liter per day, which feels like a lot to me, did have a slightly elevated risk for cardiovascular disease. But otherwise, dairy does not kind of come with that risk like red meat can. So if you like dairy, if you like yogurt and you feel like it's giving you what you need throughout the day and it's not upsetting your stomach, I would encourage you to eat it. I don't think I did not find personally any negative drawbacks to consuming yogurt multiple times a day. In fact, there could even be health benefits. So personally, as somebody who consumes quite a bit of dairy throughout the day, I encourage it. You don't need meat to hit all of your protein goals. And as always, we just want to make sure we're getting like a varied diet throughout the day, right? We want to be hitting those balanced meals and getting tons of different types of food and nutrients. But if yogurt is your go-to protein source, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. And my first thought was, well, which one leaves you feeling more satisfied? So I would encourage anyone who's thinking, should I choose protein A or protein B? Both options here, Greek yogurt and or like a meat source of protein, fantastic, complete sources of protein, which like you said, Lauren, a complete protein just means it contains all 9 essential amino acids that our bodies cannot manufacture themselves. I would then encourage you to ask, which one am I going to enjoy more? Perhaps first, like which one would my taste buds really get excited about? Two, which one is going to leave me more satisfied and more satiated? So for me personally, having a liquid protein, so let's say I'm going to whip up like a protein shake that may contain 25 grams of protein, does not leave me feeling as full for as long as if I sit down and chew an animal-based source of protein that also contains 25 grams. So even if the calories are comparable and the protein quantity is comparable, the animal source of protein is going to leave me feeling fuller. Now, that being said, that's my personal experience. So if both leave you feeling just as full, just as satisfied, pick the one that you prefer or whichever one feels most easily accessible in that moment. I don't think it matters. So I don't think the person asking this question needs to stress over it. Like if you are eating yogurt, you're hitting your protein goal and you're hitting that target and you feel like it's something you really enjoy, fantastic. I maybe would encourage you to like expand your horizons and don't eat Greek yogurt for every protein of every meal of every day. But I don't think that that's what this person was asking. If even you have a meal where you're having an incomplete protein, so let's use beans as an example. Beans for someone like yourself, Lauren, who is a vegetarian, are considered a protein, even though they're primarily made up of carbohydrates. And so you might think, oh, beans are my protein at this meal. It's not a complete protein. Even that you don't have to stress over though, because when we have a wide variety of foods, we're going to get all those essential amino acids. Now you could just combine beans and rice to get your complete protein at that meal, just like you can combine peanut butter and like whole grain bread to get all of the essential amino acids you need at that meal. It's mowing your lawn while your house is on fire. Don't stress. If you're eating protein at a meal and you are feeling really good and satisfied after that meal, carry on.
Just a quick little plug for other proteins that I eat as a non-meat eater. Greek yogurt and cottage cheese 100% are staples in my diet. They are foods I eat daily. I also love eggs, both whole eggs and egg whites. Egg whites are so underrated. They add volume to your food and they are pure protein. So for somebody who doesn't eat meat-based protein, egg whites are liquid gold. I also do a ton of tofu. I almost always have prepped tofu in my fridge. And edamame, I buy the frozen shelled stuff and I can just pop it in the microwave and then it's like 3 servings in a bag. So those are my go-to sources of protein in general. And that way I can get a variety. I can, like you said, mix and match to what I'm in the mood for. Maybe I want to add some tofu to a wrap or a salad, or maybe I want some scrambled eggs or something like that. But yeah, experiment a little bit, play around with it, but don't stress about if it's yogurt or if it's a piece of turkey. If you're getting your protein, you're winning.
Okay. So it's so funny you talk about egg whites, because one of the questions I got on my Instagram stories was, what's in your eggs and how many eggs a week do you eat a week? Now, a little background, I posted this week's question box over a photo of my breakfast and my son's breakfast. So we were eating breakfast together yesterday when I posted the question box. And so I just snapped a picture of our meal and I happened to have a plate full of eggs. I am one of those boring people who can eat the same thing on repeat for a very long period of time and like not really ever get sick of it. So my breakfast is pretty standard and it's almost always like one whole egg and then a load of egg whites. I'm at a point in my relationship with food where I don't measure it out anymore because I can kind of eyeball the quantity. I would guess it's probably between like a half cup and three quarter cup of egg whites. So like a decent amount. Mm-hmm. A quarter cup of feta cheese, give or take. And then I have my whole grain gluten-free bread on the side. And my son was having some of those eggs and some blackberries. And like he has a little waffle that he was eating. So that's what I put in my eggs. And I make my eggs that way simply because it adds protein to my eggs. So if I just sat down and had two eggs, that gives me 14 grams of protein. I know from experience, that's not enough for me. I need a lot more protein at my meal. So I add the liquid egg whites to bulk up the protein content. So I get between that and then I usually have a matcha latte. Between the milk I use in my latte, my breakfast is over 30 grams of protein, which fills me up for the morning. Based on that breakfast, I eat 7 eggs a week because one egg a morning, maybe I'll throw in like a hard-boiled egg here or there. So like, I don't know, 7 to 10 eggs a week. I don't worry about my egg consumption though. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Lauren, but I know eggs, I remember like when they were evil and people avoided them at all costs because we thought, oh, eggs are terrible because they have cholesterol. And we thought that that negatively impacted our heart health. But more recent research suggests that for most people, there are like hyper responders. So if you have an extremely heavy family history with high cholesterol, maybe this isn't for you. I have a family history of high cholesterol, but I am not a hyper responder. So research suggests that most people, myself included, dietary cholesterol from eggs does not have a significant effect on blood cholesterol levels or the increase of risk in heart disease. So certainly I wouldn't encourage you to incorporate eggs at like every meal of every day to have that as your sole protein source, just like we talked about with the Greek yogurt. Variety is important, but I am not worried about the egg yolks contributing to high cholesterol. I love eggs. I think they're amazing. And I want all the vitamins and minerals that come from the yolk, but I also want to add cheese to my eggs. And that since that's a fat, and I also add creamer to my matcha latte, I want to balance out the fat with the protein of that breakfast, which is why I choose to add some liquid egg whites. What do you eat for breakfast most days, Lauren? And what about your weekly egg consumption?
Okay. I have like two go-to breakfasts right now that I'm really into. I'm like you. I will do the, especially with breakfast, I get into such a hyperfixation meal, but currently I feel like I have two on the rotation. One is, like I mentioned, a big bowl of warmed up frozen berries. Like I like the warmed up ones because then the juice kind of helps sweeten up the Greek yogurt and cottage cheese that I add to it. So it's the warmed up fruit, cottage cheese and yogurt. I like the combo. And then I add chopped walnuts and a little bit of peanut butter for my fat. And it's delicious. It's like a parfait. It's so, so good. And like you said, it's so filling from all that protein. It's, I want to say it's at least 35 grams of protein. It might even be a little bit more if we're if we're adding in the little bit from the nuts and the peanut butter too. Or like I had today, I like egg whites mixed with 1 to 2 eggs, depending on what else I'm having. Today, I kind of just did egg whites because I added this shredded Swiss cheese that I love so much. And I also had some fruit on the side with a homemade piece of cinnamon raisin walnut sourdough that I am obsessed with and I love so much. It brings me so much joy. So it's not a high fiber carb, but it brings me so much joy. And so I get in the fiber with the fruit. I get my protein and my fat in with the eggs and the cheese. Sometimes it's egg yolk. Sometimes it's cheese. It just depends. Or sometimes it's both like you. But those are my two go-to breakfasts for now. And they've been on the rotation for quite a while.
Do you minimize your whole egg consumption for health reasons at all?
No, I forgot about that second part of the question. I don't. And depending on the day, eggs are such a go-to for me. I would say I'm probably like you where I have maybe around 10 eggs a week. If I'm going to have it, it's usually 1 to 2 whole eggs. And I wouldn't say it's 7 days a week, but it's probably 5. So yeah, eggs are a big meal and I like them any time of day. I love a scrambled egg for dinner on toast. It's so good. It just like hits the spot. It's the easiest, tastiest dinner.
I also want to throw out there, just in case you're like, I eat more than one egg a day. And Lauren and Nicole only eat one. My husband eats like 4 or 5 eggs a day in the morning. Like he makes this huge breakfast scramble. He's got great cholesterol. So like get your blood panel checked out. If you're worried about your cholesterol, like do your due diligence, make sure everything's healthy, your heart is pumping in the way that it should, but don't freak out about the egg yolk consumption because research shows, again, for most of us, totally fine. Dietary cholesterol is necessary.
Yes. I have to add one more. We do hard-boiled eggs always in the fridge, and I'll oftentimes add two of those to like a salad or something for protein. And that's two whole eggs. I eat the yolk there.
I will stand by the statement that a hard-boiled egg is the best protein ball you will ever find. So you know how I actually just went to Costco earlier this week and they now have packaged protein balls, which I think in my mind should more realistically be called energy bites because usually in protein balls, there's like maybe 5 grams of protein and it's packed with carbs and it's packed with fat, which is totally fine. Love that. I will make energy bites with oats and peanut butter and honey and chocolate chips and all the good stuff, but that is not primarily protein. So it's kind of misleading to call it a protein ball. An egg gets you 7 grams of protein. So an egg is a better protein ball than any protein ball you could buy at the grocery store or even one you could make on your own. Just saying.
Oh, I love that. Fun little side story. When my kids were little, we made protein balls all the time. I made it for them. And my daughter was going through an obsession with Spy Kids, the movies, like the old movies. And we called them Spy Balls. I think I called them that once to get her to try it. And they loved them. And for years, we always had Spy Balls in the fridge and they would just like have one and they thought it was so great and fun.
I love that. Spy Balls.
Yep.
Oh, man. Okay. This next one, I think, is a doozy. We should spend some time here. Do you have any suggestions for someone who is stuck in the cycle of overeating and making poor choices? I feel like I've been stuck in a bad choices rut for the past year.
Oh, I do have some suggestions for you, my friend. As somebody who has been there, lived that, not fun, and my heart goes out to you. So there's two kind of things you have to kind of come at this with, right? There's like the physical things you need to do, and then there's the mental shifts we need to be making. So the first and arguably one of the most important things you need to do is you need to make sure you are eating 3 to 4 balanced meals as often as possible in a day. And I want you to be eating those to a comfortable satisfaction / you know, gentle fullness, like a comfortable, like I'm completely satisfied and I am not hungry and I don't need to eat anymore. Because oftentimes people are overeating because they're restricting, right? That's the most common answer is they're trying so hard to lose weight or they're trying so hard to be, quote, good because they've been so, quote, bad and they're trying to make up for it. That they're hungry, they're overly hungry, they're undernourished, and your body's gonna fight back against that. So not that you can't focus on fat loss at all during this time, but honestly, I would recommend we set it down for a minute. We just press pause if you have a fat loss goal. If you don't, fantastic. But if you do, maybe press pause or just not hyper focus on that and make the goal to eat those 3 to 4 balanced meals. And of course, when we're talking about balanced meals, it's gonna have 25 grams of protein. It's going to have some high fiber carbs. It's going to have a little dash of fat in there, cheese, avocado, nuts, whatever it might be. And hopefully some veggies in there most of the time as well. So having those balanced meals is going to keep your body nourished. So it's not going to be on like high alert for we need more energy. We need more food. And then when you eat something like an Oreo, you won't have that urge to finish the row. Like I said, there's also some mental work you need to do. And I would start there with identifying your triggers. So maybe you are a stress eater or a boredom eater, or when your kids are driving you crazy, you head to the pantry, or when you've had a really hard day at work, your go-to is to order a pizza, whatever it might be. Try to focus on your triggers and just start with identifying them. Put no pressure on yourself to make any changes, but just start to notice what those triggers are because we can't change what we're not aware of. So once you identify them, then you can come up with some non-food coping strategies, right? If you are a stress eater, what else can you do besides eat that is going to actually leave you feeling better? Because I don't know about you, but anytime I turn to food for comfort, stress relief, whatever, usually end up feeling a little bit worse. I know I especially did when I had no control and I was eating large quantities of food to help handle those emotions. But I always felt worse. So what can you do that actually makes you feel better? Can you go for a walk? Can you call a friend? Can you sip on a cup of tea, read a book, listen to your favorite music or podcast, whatever it might be? I think it's really important to come up with some alternative strategies outside of food for those moments. And then finally, when you're in that moment of maybe you're out to dinner, and in general, when you go out to dinner, you go like all out and you eat everything in sight and the appetizers and the desserts and the big giant meals. Maybe we can come up with some reframes and we start to eat a little bit slowly and just more mindfully and remind yourself, how do I want to feel at the end of this meal? What kind of eater do I want to be? And how can I just start practicing that here and now? So It's a lot of work and it's a slow process, but you just got to get started and start trying some things and do the best you can and be really kind and patient with yourself as you go through the process, because it's hard, but you can do it 100%. What are your thoughts?
Curiosity and self-compassion are so important when it comes to, you know, a process like this, figuring out, why am I engaging in this cycle? Like, what is this helping me to feel? Like, what is this? What's problem is this being a solution for, is what we would ask, right? If every behavior is a solution to a problem, what is overeating doing for me? Is it giving me like a sense of comfort? Is it giving me like a temporary self-soothing? Is it now just like such an ingrained habit and behavior, I don't even think about it? I would echo what you said. Are you eating enough? Like, are you eating 3 well-balanced meals? Are you eating regularly throughout the day? In fact, I was talking with this, I never know how to like phrase these people, like question asker, just doesn't sound like, doesn't sound like the most efficient way. But this woman asked this question in my DMs and I really just wanted to help her. I could tell that she was kind of feeling lost and maybe desperate doesn't feel like the right word, but she was genuinely seeking out some guidance. So I was like, hey, tell me some more information. Like, let's get some data here. And it turns out she was significantly under eating during the day. Like, I asked her about her height and her weight and her gender and her physical activity level. And she was like, well, I'm eating X. And I think it's an appropriate amount of calories. Like, I think. And so we went through some calculations together and I was like, girlfriend, even if fat loss is your goal, you should easily be eating like 300 calories more than what you're aiming for. So in this situation, I find that when we're under eating, whether that's because we're so busy throughout the day that we don't feel like we have time to eat until 1, 2 PM, or if it's because we're trying to be quote good, and so we only have like teeny little bits of calories throughout the day, and then we're left at nighttime, we will always overeat. Like, we will always overeat because our body wants to keep us alive. So if we're not giving it enough, our body is going to be like, okay, well, those Oreos look really good. Like, give me the whole bag, right? Like, I'm going to eat the whole sleeve. So make sure you're eating enough. And this is where it becomes really important to emphasize what we do with our clients, which is eat as much as possible while still seeing the results that you want. The goal should not be to eat as little as possible, which is the approach like crash diets take. Eat as much as you possibly can to nourish your body and to feel great while also, you know, creating the outcomes that you desire, and your overeating will decrease. Now, again, I do think that's the physical side of things. So are you nourishing your body sufficiently? Are you getting sleep? Because if you're not sleeping well and you're not sleeping enough, you will always have increased appetite, hunger, and cravings. So like, sleep plays a huge part. Stress management plays a huge part. Are you eating enough of the right things? So if your diet is all carbohydrate, for sure you're going to overeat, right? Because you're not giving yourself protein. You're not giving yourself fiber, which are both super filling and satiating nutrients. Then there's the mental side of things. So with regard to this woman asking about like, how can I get myself out of this cycle? I would first and foremost encourage her to sit down and ask herself what the pros are of not ending the cycle. And then what the pros are of ending the cycle or changing the cycle. And that might sound like a silly question. Like, what pros are there to me overeating and making bad choices, Nicole? Like, why would there be benefits to that? Clearly there are benefits, or you wouldn't have started the cycle. You wouldn't have started the habit. So the benefit of continuing this cycle of negative choices or poor choices and overeating could be it's comfortable. Could be that that's your default coping mechanism and you don't have to find another one. Like, bottom line, you don't have to change anything. You can keep doing what you're doing. you can keep overeating and you can stay in the cycle. Now, the woman who asked this question doesn't want to. I genuinely know she doesn't want to. But what research shows is that before we're capable of creating behavior change, we have to personally understand and come to an agreement that the pros of creating change, of creating a new cycle, a new behavior pattern, outweigh the cons of creating change. Creating change is hard. You will not hear Lauren or I tell you otherwise. It is not easy work, but you have to decide, if I learn how to powerfully nourish my body and I learn how to make sure I'm eating the right foods in the right quantities and I learn how to manage my stress or my overwhelm or my loneliness in non-food related ways, my life gets better because XYZ. If you learn how that is going to outweigh the comfort of not creating any change, you're going to be successful. But that takes a lot of internal work. It's so much easier with support and help. So I'm really glad that this woman and I started a dialogue on Instagram. But changing a pattern is really hard. I think it starts with identifying why the pattern started to begin with. So you mentioned triggers, Lauren, like what triggers this cycle? And then making sure you're really crystal clear on why changing the behavior pattern or changing the cycle is worthwhile for you. Like, why do you want to do it? How does your life change?
And I have one more to add too, and it's in the mental side of it. When you are eating these foods, and I'm going to assume that these foods, this woman's overeating, like they're not carrots, right? It's probably sweets and fun foods and like things like that. What are you mentally telling yourself? Are you saying to yourself, I've already messed up. This is so bad. I can't believe I'm doing this. Are you just beating yourself up the whole time you're eating that? Because I can tell you, if that's how you're talking to yourself internally, you're going to keep going down that path. You are going to keep overeating that food because why not? F it. You've already screwed up, right? That's what you're telling yourself. When in reality, that's not the truth. You just ate a cookie or whatever it was. So if we shift how we're talking to ourselves internally and how we are mentally restricting these foods, like even if you are like, well, I already eat 3 balanced meals a day and I still overeat at night. Well, okay. How are you talking to yourself? Are you mentally restricting these foods? Even if you're not physically restricting calories, maybe you're mentally restricting. And that is going to cause you to go down that, well, screw it. I've just screwed up. I've messed everything up. So I have to keep going now versus, oh, I ate that cookie. It was really delicious and so satisfying. And now for the rest of the night, I know eating more isn't going to leave me feeling my best. So I'm going to have this, you know, water or tea or whatever, and just enjoy the rest, whatever it might be. But really pay attention to how you're talking to yourself when you are in that moment of, I need to keep eating this. What are the things that you're telling yourself? And how can you kind of fact check yourself and be like, is this true? Did I ruin everything? Or did I just have some chips? You know, we need to be really aware of if our thoughts are lying to us or not. Because a lot of times they do.
I also want to make mention of the fact, because I was just talking with one of my one-on-one coaching clients about this morning. She mentioned that she struggled with a binge episode yesterday and her frequency of binges is decreasing. So we're currently studying the triggers and how she can make them even less frequent or potentially not binge at all moving forward. And she said, it's so hard to get myself to stop in the moment. She said, I know that I don't want to do it. And I know that I don't feel great afterwards, but sometimes I just start eating and then I feel like I just can't stop. Like I don't have the ability to pause and reflect and ask the questions that you and I are talking about. Like, how will this leave me feeling and how will I feel after the fact? And so the advice that I gave her may be helpful to someone listening. I said, I totally understand that. And until we're able to get you to a place where you can pause and reflect and be mindful about your choices, can we set your environment up to make the binge or to make overeating less likely? So are you like sitting on the couch with your snack bag of like Boom Chicka Pop, or are you putting a little bit in a bowl and then taking that over to the couch? Are you eating like over the sink or in front of the freezer or fridge? Or like, are you moving yourself to a different room so you can actually enjoy the meal? Sometimes it's just helpful to have like a physical barrier in place so that we have to get up and literally go out to get the thing that we want, because then that forces us to have this internal dialogue that ideally happens even if you're in front of the food. But sometimes we just haven't strengthened that skill. We haven't like strengthened that muscle yet. So don't be afraid to set your environment up for success to help you out a little bit, right? It's why I personally prefer having a bowl of fruit on my kitchen counter compared to like leftover Valentine's or Halloween candy. Could I have it there and choose to say no to it? Yeah, but I'm probably going to say yes to it more often if it's there. Like, why would I not help myself out by having something that I know leaves me feeling better when I do snack on it?
Everybody has their like trigger foods that are very challenging for them to be around. And just like you were saying, like, how can we set ourselves up for success? So using myself as an example, when I was like really stuck in this cycle, cereal, like was sugary cereal was my favorite thing in the world. And I had to go through a period where I just didn't have it in the house because I was not going to leave my house and go buy it. But if it was in the house, I was going to eat it and I was going to eat a lot of it. And it never left me feeling good. So now I'm to a place where we have it in the house sometimes. It's still nothing I buy regularly, but we have it in the house. And it's fine. I can, if I want to eat it, I eat it. It's not this thing that's like screaming at me from the pantry anymore. But I did have to go through a period of time where I couldn't have it in the, I had to set up my environment for success, like you said. And I think it's similar to like, you know, having somebody like an alcoholic's not going to walk into a bar the day they're trying to get sober. That's not great, but maybe they could a few years down the road. I don't know. But in, you know, in the same vein, maybe taking a break from certain foods while you're healing your relationship with food and working on these like mental pieces and the physical piece, and then reintroducing them when you're in a more confident place with food is the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. I think moderation and mindfulness is always the end goal. I want you to be able to have any food in your house and in your proximity and still feel really confident and comfortable around it. But in order to get there, you may need a period of abstinence from that food, right? You may need to just not keep it around and accessible 24/7. I think it's similar to tracking, right? Like it may be helpful for a time, but I don't want you to be dependent on it forever and ever in order to feel good in your body and good around food. So I completely agree. Okay, let's throw another fun one in there. This one was cute. What's your favorite restaurant and what do you order when you go?
Oh gosh, I like this one. I am like a pizza girl through and through, I think. Pizza would be my favorite. That or like a really good grilled cheese and fries are like my, you know, Last Supper type meals. But if I had to choose like a pizza place, I love, and I think it's a chain everywhere, and I'm not usually a chain meal type person, but I love Mellow Mushroom Pizza so much. And they have one called the Great White, and it's like a white pizza, and I think there's some tomatoes on it, and it's just perfection. It is so delicious. So that would be my number one, followed very closely by a local Italian place with this like thin crust goat cheese pizza that I am in love with. So good. So that's an easy one for me. I can talk about going out to eat all day long. Nicole, what are yours?
Okay, this is terrible because I was going to say pizza too. And mine is for a slightly different reason. So I am allergic to wheat and dairy. So like pizza, right? Like bread and cheese. Can't have those. But there is a local cute little plant-based eatery. They do a gluten-free pizza crust, very, very thin. They also have cashew cream cheese, so dairy-free. I get like a tomato-based marinara. And then they have, again, totally fine meat eater. So I get the pork pepperoni, but then I add kale. They do like roasted kale on top. Typically not a kale girly, but this is so good. And like a handful of arugula on top. And it is just this good specialty pizza that like my belly is happy with. It is so amazing. And oh, I could just, yeah, every weekend I could eat there. I also think a close, like you, I could go on all day.
I'm like sitting here thinking about two more that I'm like, oh shit, I didn't say those.
Chicken fried rice is like a staple. So we had Salatai was the restaurant in my hometown, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And we, Patrick and I would go all the time and I would get their chicken fried rice because it was just so freaking good every single time. And I know that's kind of like, it's not really anything super fancy, but oh, so good.
So for any of my St. Louis people out there, I've always joked, like, I actually could be the cheapest date ever because one of my all-time favorite meals, and it's very St. Louis of me, is there is a deli called Mom's Deli in St. Louis. And it is just like this institution. It's this teeny tiny little place. There's like two picnic tables out front. You can't sit inside of it. But it is, they make their own, they call it their mom's special sauce, and they put it on their sandwiches and their bread is freshly baked. And it's just like the best deli sandwich you've ever eaten in your life. And you eat that. And then right around the corner is one of the most famous custard places in St. Louis, Ted Drew's. All my St. Louis people know exactly what I'm talking about with these two restaurants. So then you have your mom's deli sub, and then you go around the corner and you get your Ted Drew's frozen custard. And it is like the ultimate St. Louis day. And it is all so, so good. And those two restaurants have like beat inflation, and you still go there and you're like, that's all this costs? Great. Sign me up. So that is, I feel like it needs to be an honorable mention. And it's like a $10 meal.
Delicious and affordable. We love it.
Love it.
We love it. Okay, this next one, interesting. And I think we've gotten a variation of this before, but it's been a while, so we should revisit. I'm curious about your take on Orange Theory workouts. I feel like I get a good 20 minutes of weightlifting and the cardio, but I'm curious if you think I would benefit from doing more strength training separately.
This was a question that came to me from one of my email coaching clients, actually. And here was my response. So basically, I asked her, what are your ultimate goals? That's what we need to determine if we're looking at, is this a quote, good workout or not for you? Do we need to adjust the workouts? If your goal is to build muscle and get stronger, this might break some hearts. I do not believe that Orange Theory is the best way to go about doing it. If your goal is just to move your body in a fun way and get your heart pumping, and you just want to love the way you exercise, and that's Orange Theory for you, then I would encourage you to continue doing it. But like I said, if you have a goal of building muscle and getting stronger and more of like a body sculpting goal, the best and most efficient way to do that, and I say most efficient, keeping in mind it is a slow process no matter what, is to follow a program, a program that is structured and planned and designed to be building muscle and utilizes progressive overload with that, meaning that every week or so, every few weeks, you are pushing yourself a little bit more, maybe in your weights or your reps. And it's a structured program, essentially, as opposed to like, I'm going to go in today and I'm going to maybe do this workout and jump on the treadmill in between. And it's a little more like I said, fun. I'm not hating on Orange Theory at all. But if you really want to build muscle, you need to follow a structured program that repeats the same workouts for 4 to 6 weeks at a time, so you can progress on those moves. And in this case, too, to build that muscle and to get stronger, the boring basics will win out. You don't need to be doing anything fancy. You don't need to be hopping on treadmills and getting your heart rate sky high at certain points throughout the workout. You just need to rely on like the basic foundations of lifting, doing them well, and working at getting stronger at them over time, combined with proper nutrition, meaning you're eating enough, especially protein. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I unfortunately am not going to say anything different. And I will speak from my personal experience as a former personal trainer, but I think even more importantly, my husband is a personal trainer and a program writer, and he has studied this more than anyone else I know. And he also writes my workouts. And essentially, if I'm like, I'm bored of my workouts, he's like, great, you're exactly where you should be. Because there's so much variety and like spice we try to throw in to exercise to make it more exciting. And I get it. If you are just starting out with being physically active, do what is fun. Like just go and move your body and have loads of fun. But if you are fairly experienced with exercise and especially strength training, you do have to, you know, stop doing the silly things like the one-legged squat on a BOSU ball and jumping over the bench and just like doing crazy things that look exciting and like maybe get your heart rate up because it's more of like a metabolic workout and it looks super fancy and super fun. And you got to stick to the boring basics and make sure that you are increasing your load selection, like your weight over the course of the 4 to 6 weeks, or you're increasing your rep range. And yeah, there's only so many movements that the body can do in terms of like a squat and a hinge, a push and a pull. And so the movements or the exercises, I should say, that are going to maximally tax your musculature system, which is what we want, are going to be the same, you know, like maybe with a slight variation, right? Like a single leg deadlift instead of a bilateral deadlift, or, you know, a pause squat instead of a regular squat. Like there are variations. You don't have to do the same five exercises today for the rest of your life. But in this situation, the boring basics are best, unfortunately. And yeah. I typically encourage clients to think of strength training as something that will tax your muscles faster than it taxes your heart rate. Now, sometimes you work something and like lower body, those are big muscles. So your heart rate is also increasing while you're doing something like a heavy squat or a heavy deadlift. I'm not saying that they work in isolation of one another. Certainly they don't. But I think a lot of women especially are taught that things like bar or body pump or perhaps some of the strength that happens at like an Orange Theory type class is strength training, when in reality, it's taxing your heart rate, your cardiovascular system more than it's actually using your muscles.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there's just not much else to add. I will say shout out to the Jordan Syatt app, which is the one that I've been using for like a year and a half. And I love it. I use three workouts a week. They're usually like four different exercises for each workout. They're nothing. It's proper rest times. You push yourself hard on these four, like you said, kind of basic. There's a push day, there's a pull day, and there's a lower body day. And they change up every 4 weeks, but not dramatically. I'm not doing crazy different things. I'm deadlifting most of the time. I'm squatting most of the time. I'm, you know, overhead pressing and bench pressing most of the time. Like, yeah, there's only so much you can do. I would encourage you to embrace the bore and just enjoy how good it feels to be getting stronger. Cause it is a really good feeling when all of a sudden you're like, oh, I used, you know, 20 pound dumbbells for this move last week and I just got out a couple reps with the 25s. That's great. I got stronger. Like, look for the excitement there as opposed to like, I'm doing all these crazy moves all over the gym like that person on Instagram does. Look at how great I am.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're coming from a cardio background, it's a hard mental transition to make. I know personally, I used to be like hardcore runner and then got into like cycling a little bit, but like cardio queen. And when I started learning how to strength train, I would walk away from my workout feeling like it wasn't enough because I wasn't sweaty enough. I wasn't like completely beat into the ground from my workout. And I think the difference with strength is you're focusing on how much you can lift or how much you can move with great form. So usually on my workouts, what my husband and personal trainer will write is 1 to 2 RIR, which means 1 to 2 reps in reserve. So he wants me to push a weight that I can do for the rep range, but with only 1 to 2 good reps left in the tank. And then I should not be able to do more if I'm choosing an appropriate weight selection. And I think a lot of women misrepresent themselves by choosing light weights because we're worried about getting bulky or we don't feel like we can do something. Focus on what your body is able to do. Focus on how strong you actually are. Worst case scenario, you pick a weight that's too heavy. You got to put it back and pick something else. Okay, no big deal. Like no harm, no foul. Make sure you're still using proper form, of course, but strength should be strength. It should be strengthening. It shouldn't be something where you're like, oh, I'm just doing cardio. I can't possibly like do anything else after this. Like you should be able to live your life and have a day after a strength training workout. I get that there are certain workouts where you're pushing your max, which should happen very, very rarely, but we're talking about most strength training workouts.
Yeah. And we are not hating on cardio, by the way.
No.
I know you do cardio. I do cardio and I'm actually a runner. Like I am, they're both really important for our overall health, but they're two separate things is what we're saying.
Right. Right. Two separate things. So I think that that's what this woman was asking, right? Yeah. Is like, am I capitalizing on my strength training? Go to Orange Theory if you love like the cardio component. I have a client who also was, she was formerly an Orange Theory member. And what she would do is like spend more time in the strength section. And she would just be like, oh, I'm going to like do a full strength workout today. And then she would do cardio days. Eventually she realized it was better for her just to get a gym membership because she wasn't really utilizing the most of those classes, but we're not hating on Orange Theory. It's just predominantly a cardio based workout.
Exactly.
Okay. Final question, Lauren. And then we'll wrap the show up. Cause this was a doozy, like 6 questions or something. Should you track veggies in a fat loss phase?
So this question it depends answer, I feel like, because do I want people stressing out and weighing out their spinach or their tomato slices? Absolutely not. That is what, 10, 15, 20 calories max. You are not going to lose progress because you didn't measure out your spinach. Like, believe me. That being said, there are vegetables that can add up. So I'm thinking more of the starchy vegetables or I mean, even like I'll make a lot of the bags of like steamable broccoli. Like if I pour a big serving onto my plate, it's like 100 calories. If I'm in a deficit, that's significant. Things like potatoes and, like I said, the more starchier vegetables, some squash and things like that. Yeah, you want to be aware of that because vegetables still have calories. However, I'm hesitant with this one just because I want to make sure people aren't misunderstanding. Vegetables are very important. We want to include vegetables. We don't stress out about the calories about vegetables because we are getting all of the delicious fiber and micronutrients that these vegetables are providing us. And if you are in a fat loss phase and you're overthinking, like, how many cucumber slices did I eat? How many calories is this pepper? I mean, yes, they contain calories, but at the end of the day, I just don't think people are overeating vegetables and knocking themselves out of a caloric deficit for the most part. Again, there may be some exceptions with things like potatoes, but for the most part, I don't know. I don't want people to overly stress about their vegetables in a calorie deficit. Do you have a different opinion on this?
I get a similar question often, which is like, should I worry about starchy versus non-starchy vegetables? And my answer is usually something along the lines of, are you just starting your fat loss process or are you trying to lose the last 5 pounds, the last 5 to 10 pounds? If you are at the very end of your fat loss goal and you're trying to lose what we often refer to as vanity weight, like you are healthy, you are happy, your body is functioning, and at this point, it's kind of just like a fun game, for sure, then maybe we want to talk about starchy v non-starchy veggies. Maybe we want to try logging our vegetables in an app to see how many additional calories we get each day from vegetables. But if you are at a point where you're just not eating enough vegetables and you know that there are many changes that you could make in order to live a healthier life and live in a leaner body, I don't think you need to stress over it. I really think that there's probably 1,000 other things that we could do first that would be more beneficial than you tracking your vegetables. I mean, if you're going to track, for sure, log the 2 cups of broccoli you had at dinner. Like that doesn't take that much more time. So if I was logging and I was trying to get an accurate picture of my day, I wouldn't not log. Like maybe I wouldn't worry about the handful of spinach I threw in my shake, but like other vegetables, sure, I'd log. But for most people who are not at a point where they're logging their calories consistently, non-issue. You don't need to worry about how many calories are in your vegetables. It is extremely, extremely difficult to eat too many vegetables to the point where that is going to be a barrier to your fat loss. No one's doing that. What they're doing potentially is having too many vegetable toppings. So like salad dressing and cheese and butter and like dips. That is something that I would encourage you to track, just to be mindful of that consumption. But you don't need to stress over your vegetables. No one is stuck losing weight because they're eating too many vegetables. No one in the history of ever is eating too many vegetables, and that's why they can't lose weight.
It reminds me of when people say, like, we shouldn't eat too many carrots because of the sugar in carrots. Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, do you honestly think that people are unhealthy or struggling to lose weight because they're eating too many carrots? Like, how absurd does that sound? It's insanity. So let's focus on eating our vegetables because of all the delicious health benefits that they bring us, and they are so tasty. And yes, like you said, be mindful of other things outside of your vegetable intake, things like the sauces, the dressings, the cheese, the sneaking bites off your kids' plates.
Yeah. Eat more vegetables is the general consensus without freaking out about how many calories or carbs are in them, because that's definitely not what you need to spend your mental headspace on.
100%.
Okay. That's what we have for you guys this week. Thanks for the questions. This was so exciting. Lauren and I were really excited to record this because we had so many questions to answer for you guys. As always, I say this every time, but I feel like it's worth mentioning. If you have a question, something you're navigating personally, something you're curious about, something you read in a recent news article, like send us a DM. We love to answer them. First of all, we'll answer you personally. Like we love to have conversations like that with you. But also if it's something we feel like the general audience could benefit from, we'll talk about it here because we're all about debunking misinformation and sharing no-nonsense nutrition education with you. Thanks for joining us for another week, squad.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.